Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Beyond Rent. If you are looking for inspiration, then you are listening or watching to the right episode. Today we have Joseph Jackson joining us to talk about his journey in life and how he is using his life experiences to create better communities for people to live in. Joseph, welcome to Beyond Rent.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one. I've heard a little bit of your story, but we're going to uncover a lot more of it today as we go through our conversation. And it really is inspirational. You have a lot of things that you've done in your life to kind of pave the path to where you're at right now and doing what you're doing with your company. So I'm excited to learn more about those experiences and your inspiration, your motivation behind what you do every single day. So really excited for this. So I really want to kind of jump right into the story and have you kind of tell it from your perspective. And I think you want to go back a few decades maybe and start with the beginning. So I'm going to turn it over to you to really kind of start from where you see the beginning of your story being.
Yeah. So I see the beginning of the story being back in childhood. So I actually grew up in a mobile home park community that was owned by my grandparents. So I grew up there around family, running around. But one of the things that I did was I helped them maintain the mobile homes. So I have pictures of me at, 7, 8 years old on top of mobile homes with a Cool Seal sealing the roofs or underneath the mobile homes because I was smaller, getting under there fixing pipes and stuff. So it was amazing. I had a great childhood doing that. I learned a lot of great things. So the biggest thing about that, though, is I do remember the stigmatism that came with mobile home parks. Now that I'm a parent, I can kind of see it here or there, right? But it all comes down to, my friends couldn't come over to my house to spend the night, right? Because you lived in a trailer park, and or I was embarrassed to bring somebody over when I was getting off the bus because I was like, man, I live in a trailer park. I'm one of the poor kids. I don't all this and that. And that's what really drove me into this industry, into this niche, was that I said, well, if I'm going to get into real estate, let me get into a community that I can give back to, right? And change the culture of, because I do think that mobile home parks are what they're called, manufactured housing communities now. They're a lot different than they were back in the day. And there's a lot of great operators that are out there that have the same kind of mindset I do, wanting to change the stigmatism and clean them up and make them communities where everybody's proud of living in them.
Yeah, I always love hearing people's stories and how they use what they've gone through to impact their own story as well as other people's lives. And we all go through things. We go through things that are good. We go through things that are bad. And really, it's not about the good and the bad, but really it's about how you use those situations to impact other people and really better your life and other people's lives. And you definitely are doing that. So I love that you really started there in the very beginning, living in a mobile home park, mobile home community. And the fact that this idea of even the terminology that has changed over the years from trailer park to mobile home to manufactured housing, even that is part of this story that I know we try to tell as a company, and I know you try to tell as well, because people really will use the wrong terms to describe what these communities are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you elevate the language, you elevate whatever you're trying, the business that you're trying to bring up also, right? Because lifting the stigmatism of the communities that we're working in and stuff. If they're walking around, if everybody's saying, hey, the trailer park, this or that, right? That doesn't paint a clear picture of what we're actually trying to do here. So,
well, right there was great advice right there. If you elevate the language, the way you talk about things, you can already start paving the path for how you want to create different experiences and really help people feel better about where they're living just by using different terminology. So I think that's great. So, okay, so you're living in a manufactured housing community, that what we would call it today, not what you called it back then. As a child, you were having these experiences. You were feeling different because of that. Let's kind of move through your story a little bit. Where did you go from there? Coming from maybe some beginnings that you weren't necessarily super proud of, right? You were struggling with that a little bit. Where do you take that as you transition into maybe a teenager or into an adult?
Yeah. So, you know, luckily I was super good at football and sports and stuff. So, you know, I got a lot of self-worth out of that. So from there, I decided that I wanted to follow in my father's footsteps, and I joined the United States Marine Corps right out of high school. It was probably one of the easiest things I've ever done in my life. I loved it. I had a roof over my head, 3 meals a day. They gave me a uniform to wear, and all I had to do is, do what I was told and say, yes, sir. And do what I was told. So, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved it so much. I stayed in the Marine Corps for 21 years. Throughout that, I, deployed multiple times. I, got to meet, great people throughout, and I still, to this day, I miss it because the 18-19 year olds kept me young. That's a fact for all them years.
So 21 years in the Marine Corps is a very long time. So I guess first off, thank you for that level of service. That's just phenomenal. And the fact that you loved it, I'm sure, makes it easy for you to stay in that long and have that experience. And you talked a little bit about how it was easy for you because it was, okay, people were telling you what to do and they kind of provided a path and things like that. But that's still really, really hard work. You're traveling, you're away, you're building a life that's very different than what most people's lives look like. How do you face challenges like that? And how do you accept that that's kind of the path that you're on and then stay on it for so long?
Yeah, I don't want to underplay it. Times were very difficult, right? But I stay positive in just my outlook on the whole situation. Look, the situation is this: if I wouldn't have went into the Marine Corps, then who knows where I would have been at this point. I know that I wouldn't have saw, I wouldn't have saw Japan, Australia, Italy, Germany. I wouldn't have saw half the world that I saw. That I know that. I wouldn't have met half the people that I met. Right. So even though it was, at times super, super tough, it's all about outlook. I remember one night we were about to fly home from Iraq, and we were on the tarmac. Right. So you have all your packs and you're laid out on the tarmac waiting for your plane to come in. You could wait for days. Who knows? There's a time that's supposed to come in, but who knows? Anyways. I was laying there looking at the stars on my pack, just sitting there. You could hear some of the guys, they're moaning and groaning. We've been there for probably, 18 hours on this tarmac. I remember looking up at the stars and going, I get to do this. This is what I get to do every day. I get to be out here with these cool guys. We're about to get on this cool, this super cool aircraft, and thinking about the stuff that I did, over there. Flying in, helicopters all around Iraq, and seeing this or seeing that, So it's all about perspective, and I've always tried to look on the bright side of everything. I know that like I said, it's just I always want to try to make things better wherever I am. I try to make them better, and the Marine Corps, I just absolutely loved it. And what I brought to that was, a positive attitude and a good work ethic that I gained from my father growing up in the mobile home park. Right.
Yeah. When you're a child and you're being asked to help repair those manufactured homes, I mean, you're going to learn a lot of work ethic there. And obviously you said you followed in family footsteps, even be in the military and so forth. So, but I really appreciate that perspective and looking at, the positive in situations. It's easy to say, these are things that I have to do versus these are things that I get to do. Little mind shifts along those ways. And I can only imagine that attitude helped those around you, because a lot of the people that you were around were same thing. They're away from home, away from family, maybe struggling with things that you weren't struggling with in that moment.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And, that was one of the greatest things about being in the military, was being able to be a mentor, be able to be a leader to men that were just phenomenal. Right. And you got to be their mentor going through this journey in the Marine Corps that you're going through with them. Right. And, that was the biggest honor, and I just loved it. But yeah, I did bring that. Now, I mean, don't get it wrong. I definitely went through phases and definitely went through situations where, maybe I had to get upset or something like that. But at the end of the day, the guys knew that I had, their best interests in my heart. And it really is a great journey. And anybody thinking about going into the Marine Corps out there, if you're watching this, then I would highly suggest it. The military is one of the last places that that it really is a express lane to jumping classes, right? So you take a person that's maybe grew up poor and stuff like that, and you join the military for 4 years, you do honorable service and pass that. It really does kind of catapult you past that real struggle of trying to elevate yourself, because people do give you opportunities and stuff like that because they know what type of person you kind of are just by what you've done,
Yeah, that's really great to hear. And it is a path forward for a lot of people. And it's exciting to hear good experiences coming out of situations like this too. A lot of people don't know much about the military or the Marines, and it's kind of this unknown for many, especially younger people. They don't know what it really looks like. They're not talking to people like you that have had those great experiences. So thanks for sharing those things. Now, when you're thinking about the 21 years that you were in the Marines, I have to wonder, at what point during that 21 year time period did you start putting your thoughts back on real estate, right? Because you kind of mentioned early on, as you told about those humble beginnings, that that's why you're involved in this industry now, because you wanted to kind of go back and make things better. 21 years is a long time. How long before you started saying, maybe I should get into real estate?
Yeah, so year 19, right? It was right there at the end. And what's kind of set it off was, there was an old guy that was sitting in a cubicle. He's a retired master guns, E9 in the military. But he retired and came back and worked for the Marine Corps again. I was like, yeah, one more year. And he goes, yeah, I'll save a seat right next to me over here in the cubicle. Right. And I looked at the cubicles and I was like, oh man, there's no way I can go and sit in a cubicle. That's just not me. I was like, what am I going to do when I grow up? I had no idea. And I just started thinking. My buddy was like, he was flipping duplexes and triplexes, stuff like that, some small. And he was doing really well at that. And I kind of started dabbling in that and stuff like that. But I figured out, I was like, we'll have to buy hundreds of these things to make it work, man. He was like, well, it's for the short term. You'll still have to get a job and stuff like that. I'm retiring. I don't want to do this, So anyways, I got up with a group. It's called, ADPI, active duty, passive income. It's a military group that helps military groups, help military members out with, real estate. It's a mastermind. I got with them. They really helped me out. At the very first, they were like, hey, take action. So I took action, and I found my first mobile home park. Had no idea what to do, even how to submit an LOI. But I was gung-ho for it. I negotiated owner financing for it, and I got it under contract. And then I found a couple of other military members that wanted to jump in with me. And that's where the journey really starts in the mobile home park industry.
So that is so interesting that you went that whole time having a great career in the Marines, and then you had that moment of, what am I going to do the rest of my life? Because, I mean, being in the military and being active and having that style of life, I can only imagine that thinking that you're going to sit at a cubicle for another 20 plus years for the rest of your career, just it didn't resonate with you, and you needed something where you can have a hands-on approach. So as you moved out of the military and into this idea of real estate, were there certain challenges that you faced along the way that almost stopped you? Because I'd imagine that's a big transition.
Yeah. So a couple of the biggest thing was the capital, right? I mean, in the military, we're not getting paid, a ton of money in the military, even being in 21 years, you're not making, large amounts of money. Right. And so me and my wife, we did have a savings, at the time, this and that, but it was smaller. Like I said, I did throw caution to the wind on that and did a huge bet on myself when I went into mobile home parks and took our life savings and started investing in this property and in the next one. And the next thing you know, I'm a year out now from retirement. And my wife was saying, hey, you pretty much spent our whole life savings. What are we going to do? You know, you retire in a year, you know? And so that was the biggest thing. And then the mind shift of kind of going to the civilian world of things, it's just a little different, whereas when I'm talking to somebody in the military or whatnot, it's a little different because just number one, the way we talk. So it's a little different, negotiating with someone that hasn't talked to anybody in the military and me using acronyms or this or that or whatever. So there was a couple of challenges coming out, but the capital and the know-how of like what to do, the ins and outs, the minute stuff, and having to learn that at a rapid speed.
Yeah. And is that where that mastermind group really came in to help? I'd imagine they kind of walked you through that, or at least gave you some resources or some people that may help.
Oh yes, absolutely. They helped out tremendously. I learned a ton from there. They call it a hero. It's somebody that kind of gives back to the community and helps other military members now. So I help incoming military members into the group. I help them understand how to do it now, and I see it as a way of giving back to a community once again that helped me get somewhere else also. So
no, and I think that idea of giving back is core to who you are and the story that you tell, and obviously we're going to talk a lot more about different parts of your story, but giving back really is a big part of it. And I think anyone that's serves in the military, they are actively giving back, whether you think about it every day or not, you really are. And then, so you come out and then you do the same thing, right? You join this group and now you can find ways to help others make the same transition that you did. Now, when you're talking to people that are looking to maybe go from military into real estate, are there certain skill sets that you like to point out to them that they already have that they may not realize that they have, they're going to fit really well into real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest is the grit, right? The grit and the work ethic is one of the biggest, the two biggest things, because it's going to be a lot of work. Because about 90% of the people in the military that are trying to get into real estate, they're in the same situation I was, right? So the first couple of deals that I had, maybe I had some savings saved up so I could put on there. But for the most part, it's a lot of sweat equity that goes into it, and having the grit, the ups and downs of the real estate, of finding a deal, losing that deal, going to the next deal, putting a ton of time into that deal, and then losing that one over and over again until you find the deal that really clicks with you, and you take that deal down, and the work ethic kicks in then. I mean, even from finding the deal to running it, I think that it's just uniquely the discipline of following through and just keep going and having that mindset of pushing through the adverse situations that you're going to be put in, and having that good positive mental attitude as you go. It really does a lot to really help you get along your journey a lot faster.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people avoid real estate because of all the unknowns. There is a lot of financial risk that's wrapped up into it. There's all of these things that, scare them away from it. But I think going through the Marines and being in the military can set people up for success in that way that you just spoke about, this idea of grit and putting in the work and all of these things. That's the, I'm not going to say it's the easy part, but that's the part that you already are accustomed to. You know, right, that part. You can, you already have that kind of built into your character, where a lot of other people, let's just be honest, they don't have that same level of experience to provide them with that. So I'm sure once you got past, I guess, the financial risk and understanding some of the terminology, the work was never a problem.
No, not at all. The work is the easy part. It's really the hardest part for me is the learning, right? Not that I can't learn. It's just that there's so much to learn, right? Every time I turn around, I mean, just like with Rent Manager now, I mean, I am constantly learning something day in and day out about that system. And it goes on forever. There's not a time that you're like, hey, I'm comfortable. I'm fine. Every day there's something that you learn different. And then just like with that, in the mobile home park, learning how to sell houses. Okay, well, selling houses go like this. Well, what if you bring this option and that option and this, you know, so there's so much to learn. That's the hardest part for me is making sure that I set time like aside each day to learn, right? And I learn on the job, obviously, but to focus squarely, if nothing else, in RMU or in one of these other masterminds or something like that, where I'm learning all the time to be better at my craft. And I think, like I said, the work is the easy part. I'll get out there all day and work. That's no problem. It's the figuring out and being uncomfortable all the time with trying to tackle these huge hills. Some of these tasks that you go in, that you try to learn, you look at it and you go, there's no way that I'm going to learn this. This is just so complicated and this and that. But then you say, okay, one step at a time. And you just start it that way. And next thing you know, you look behind you and you're almost at the top of the mountain with that lesson, right? You kind of understand where it's going and you're starting to feel comfortable. And then next thing you know, you look over and there's the next peak that keeps going up, right? And you're like, okay, well, that's the next task. One step at a time. Let's go.
Now, and that's a great mentality, because that's really the only way we accomplish anything in life, is by taking one step at a time, learning what we don't know. And there are so many people out there that are willing to help and kind of guide people. Now, you used a few phrases there that I want to use to segue into something else that I want you to talk about today. You talked about, you know, seeing the next peak in front of you, taking the mountain, taking the hill, things like that. I want you to tell me about the hike that you've done that helps us support veterans. So again, going back to kind of the core of who you are and giving back, tell us a little bit about this hike that you went on for veterans.
So I had the privilege of going on a hike. It's for a trail. It's the John Muir Trail. It's Yosemite to Mount Whitney in California. Mount Whitney is actually the highest point. The summit of Mount Whitney is the highest point in the lower 48 states. And it's at 14,505 feet. But anyways, you start at the beginning, and the whole trail is about 212 miles total. It took us 13 days to hike it. So averaging, I think it's like 14 miles or 15 something miles a day. But I was with a great group of guys. I mean, awesome group of guys. And what we were doing it for was it's Veterans Community Project. And what they do is they build tiny house communities for homeless vets. They take them in and give them shelter, make sure that they're comfortable, and they get them back on their feet by giving them, you know, job training and all kinds of other things. There's all kinds of things that they help out with. One of my buddies, Eric, I met him in ADPI. He's one of the owners there. And I saw on his Facebook post, he's like, hey, this is what I'm doing. If you would like to volunteer to raise money and to go on this hike, please contact me. I hit him up. I was like, man, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to do it. It's a great cause. I love giving back to the veteran community. because it's done so much for me. But also, I just don't believe that somebody that willingly signed up to, maybe give their life at some point, should be homeless. I mean, that's just, and then, I'm willing to kind of put my money and my time where my mouth is on that. And so I loved it. It was one of the greatest experiences that I've ever had. It really was a transformational event in my life. It really was. And the cause that we helped, I mean, it just made it even better.
Yeah, that is so inspirational to hear. And one of the things that I hear in this is that no matter what your passion in life is, no matter what your experience has been, there's an opportunity out there for you to kind of merge all of these things together for a good cause, right? You're a veteran, you're involved in real estate, and you found a way to use those two things, put them together and help people. And I would completely agree. Obviously, you've had a good transition out of the military, but not everyone does. And there are people that really, really struggle and maybe have lifelong struggles because of what they experienced serving our country. So the fact that there are so many ways to give back and help support these people, and this hike was just one of them, it's great. So really, really excited to hear your story about that. I mean, 212 miles and the highest peak in the lower 48. I mean, these are really serious things. This was not an easy hike. This wasn't a walk in the park by any means.
Yeah, no. So it really was probably one of the most challenging things that I've done in my life. It really pushed me physically, spiritually. It really did. So I got altitude sickness on one of the peaks because I'm coming from Georgia. Really only had one day to acclimatize over there. Georgia, I live at six, I think it's like 600 feet above sea level. We landed over where we're staying is like at like 9 or 10,000 feet. So it wasn't a very good transition. I did get altitude sickness about the third day. I had to come off the trail, and at that point, I had a decision to make because I had we had a it was snowing. Number one, it was snowing in August in California, but I got altitude sickness. I had to come back down. I was super scared because I didn't know what was going to happen. What was going to, I had to get down. So I went down, went back into town. I'd already hiked 8 miles that day, had to hike that 8 miles back and then another 13 miles out, right? To get out of, and I was super sick. As soon as I got out, I went straight to our urgent care. The doctor, he just said, "Hey, this is altitude sickness and this and this." And so he gave me, I forget what it's called. He gave me some medication for it, gave me some IVs, told me, you should be fine, this and that. And so I had a decision though, because I was out, and I had been kind of, it been really tough because I was getting, trying to get my, my sea legs, if you will, hiking, that long, that far, each day at that elevation. And, sleep, it was super cold outside each night. I was miserable. And I sat there that night, after I got out of, the urgent care or whatever. I called my wife and I said, "Hey, this is what's happened." She said, "Man, that sorry. So what are you going to do?" And I said, "Oh, I've rebooked my plane. I'm on my way home." And she's like, "Oh, you're going to come home?" And I said, "Yeah, I mean, why would I go back in there? I got a warm bed at home, this and that." And she basically told, I mean, what she said was like, "Hey, listen, if you come, if you stop now, I just want you to make sure that in your heart that you're content with that, because I just know you, and you're not a quitter, and so this may haunt you forever, and I don't want that to weigh on you, right?" And of course, she's right. I had let that little voice in the back of my head get to me and stuff, and I was just not in a good place at that moment in time, and she kind of snapped me back out of it. I grabbed my pack, I went back out there, but with that. Now I'm a day and a half, behind the guys or whatever, right? And so now I'm camping out there on the trail by myself, not another, barely seeing anybody else, camping out. It's a different feeling when you're, 20 miles away from anybody or anything with no communications, because there's no cell phone, no internet. I mean, everything's down, and you're just out there. So there was a lot of spiritual time for me, just kind of thinking about life and actually working out deep-seated issues on it, and that I carried from, my childhood or from the military in general. And to go back to a good transition out of the military, I did have a pretty good transition. It's just because I was focused on what I wanted to do when I got out, and then also my rock, my wife, because a lot of people that get out, they don't have that person that will bring them back and really keep them grounded. And so, anyways, on this hike, it was just amazing, just the sceneries and the beauty and everything. And then, like I said, my whole mind set shifted once I got back on the trail, because I was out there for a purpose again. It wasn't that, oh man, I'm struggling for 3 days, oh, I got sick, and my mindset just kind of deteriorated, and my wife just kind of snapped me out of it. And once I went back out there, I went at it as a mindset of being thankful, and grateful for the ability, and just for everything, to be able to do that, and understanding that, a homeless vet on the street, they don't have the opportunity to quit when things get rough or it gets cold or anything like that. And that really pushed me, And I will tell you that as I was going, like some of the analogies, I mean, some of the things I talked about before, it was true, because I would get about halfway up halfway up the mountain, I'd be like, man, this is so much farther I got to go, right? But then you would look back and you'd go, look how far I've actually come. I mean, it's amazing. And so I did learn a lot of lessons, and one of them was that look back on your past, right, to see how far you've come, to get that little boost to say, man, look at all of I've achieved, right? But don't continue to look back, because then that'll make you complacent with, well, look how much I've come. I don't need to go any further. I mean, it's really tough to keep going. Look at all I've done. So if you continue to live in the past, then you'll become complacent, right? And then on the opposite side, I would look up and see how much further I had to go, and how much more I had to give or whatever. And it would kind of discourage you a little bit. So if you just kept looking up at how far you had to go, right, then you would get discouraged. So I really, really focused on, and I know it's cliche to say this, but one step at a time, right? Like I literally was like, one step at a time, one more. I can do one more step, one more. That's it, And living in the presence, man. I mean, like I don't think that people actually understand how much of a gift this moment in time is. And if you're always looking back or always looking forward, right? I mean, it's good to have your goals and to look forward, right? But don't keep looking, and don't keep looking back. I mean, because all the gifts that you may have prayed for, you may have wanted, most likely you're getting them now, right? You're getting them right now, but you're so caught up in the past or the future that you're missing it all. You're missing the whole show, right? And that's one of the big things that I worked out with myself on this hike.
That's phenomenal. I just love hearing that. And the fact that you got sick, you didn't give up. And again, so much credit to your wife. We all need people in our lives that will challenge us, that'll call us out a little bit, really push us to that next step. But then you put yourself in a situation all by yourself where you really just had to make that decision every moment to just keep going. Where most of us, let's be honest, like we don't put ourselves in those situations very often, to where we are challenged on that level, to where we can just rely on yesterday's successes or think the next challenge is too big. Like we kind of live in that world, and it's easy to be there, but you were in a situation where you didn't have that choice, and you really just had to look inside and decide to take that next step. And I've never done anything like that. Kind of inspired to at least start doing some level of hiking now, just to say, I'm going to put myself out there by myself occasionally, and take a risk.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's life changing. You take your phone away from you, you take all the distractions, and you're left with you, and the beauty of the world that's going on around you. you get to have conversations with yourself and get to work things out that maybe you hadn't thought of in years because you've been so busy and so focused on other things, or how, if you're making somebody happy, or if you're doing this, are you doing the right things? It's just you. There's no distractions. And, you know, a lot of people may not like exactly the conversation you'll have with yourself in that moment. But, you know, I think that it gives you more power. And it really, and on a, you know, on another level, it just says, look, it's one of those feathers in the hat. Like, look at what I accomplished and stuff like that, you know? So it does wonders for the self-confidence also. So all the way around, I would highly suggest, you know, do starting with day hikes or whatever. This was the very first hike that I ever did. So I mean, other than the military, you know, we did hikes, but I've never done, you know, 200 miles. I think the furthest one was 20 miles that I had done. And then after that, you know, we were done. But yeah, to do it every day and to wake up and do it you know, for 13 days straight or whatever, it was challenging. And, you know, I love challenging myself. I love being uncomfortable. So,
now that's an amazing story. I really appreciate you talking us through that in detail, because there is so much that we all can learn from it. And I think the biggest one is to put yourself out there and challenge yourself, do things that maybe you wouldn't normally do. Maybe even if you're not quite trained for it, right? You know, we don't want people to take too much of a risk, because I mean, you can have some negative experiences there, but like really pushing ourselves, what is possible? What am I able to do? I think is really, really great.
Yeah. I don't think that enough people give themselves credit, you know, of what they can accomplish, because, you know, it's just like with physical activity, you don't think that you can hit a certain milestone, right? But if you keep pushing yourself little bit by little bit, you'll be amazed how far and how resilient your body is on that kind of stuff. And that goes with, you know, work also. Like, you never think that you're going to be a whiz at whatever, or you're going to be able to conquer or take down a mobile home park. You know, I would have never thought that, you know, 5 years ago, wouldn't have been a thought in my head that I would have been able to do that. But once you accomplish that, you know, you can do it. Now it just becomes, you know, the next challenge or whatever for it.
Yeah. And you had made a comment about staying uncomfortable. And I think that's part of it, right? Pushing yourself just that little further every single time. And yeah, training your body and your mind to do things that maybe you never thought was possible. That's really the case. And you talked about going back to kind of your experience in mobile home parks, manufactured housing. Give us kind of an update on where you're at with that, right? So, okay, we talked about your beginnings, your military, your real estate. Now you're getting involved in, you know, these organizations giving back to homeless veterans, things like that. Where does this kind of come full circle to bringing, I guess, value and looking at the potential of the real estate investments that you're making right now?
Yeah, so in the communities that we have right now, you know, the things that we try to do is, number one, we always start off with, first of all, ensuring that the communities are safe and clean, right? And so we go in, we make sure that everyone's there that should be there, and, you know, making sure that the place is safe and making sure that that everybody in the community is good and all that good stuff. And then we clean up the park if it needs it. Most of them do to a certain extent. We go in, we give it a facelift, and we make it really nice, right? And so we start with that. And then at the same time, we are getting to know the tenants and stuff like that, and what their actual, like, you know, what their needs are and what their desire, you know, what they need and what they're looking for basically in the community. You know, we have single moms that have to, you know, choose between food or rent or what, you know, all we, you know, dealing with manufactured housing communities, you're basically, after us, it's there's nowhere else to go basically after, you know, manufactured home communities. It's either that, maybe there's some, you know, somewhere else to go, but not much. Right. So you are dealing with affordable housing here. And so by giving back, what you kind of give back is the self-respect of where you live, because I can control if it's safe, it's clean, right? And then at that point, then what I can do is help in other ways. We start food banks in our communities. We start, you know, community activities like after-school tutoring for the kids, right? That way that they can do better in school if they need that help. We offer budgeting classes and financing classes for the adults that live there. Because ultimately, you know, I would love for the kids to graduate high school and get into college, you know, to break maybe that that generational gap. The parents, I would love for them to understand budgeting and finances and understand how that, you know, how it all works. Because coming from a mobile home park back in the day, and my father still, he still works. He's almost 70 years old, and, you know, he's still working as a construction worker. I was never taught finances, and I never was taught a budget. You know, how do you budget? How do you do checks? How do you do this? I was never taught any of that, right? And so my thing is I would love to teach the community that. And then from there, as it goes, we continue to, you know, we put amenities in there now. You know, we pave the roads. We bring in new homes. And after a little bit, it starts looking like a completely new community, right? And you see the people and how they talk about it and how they talk to us and stuff. It just builds pride within the community. You're actually bringing the community closer by making it the way you are, because now they have pride in the community. They talk to their neighbors again. That now they have pride in it. So they start doing little things. They start planting flower gardens. They start planting trees, and they make sure that this is done and that's done. And it just becomes a whole nother little world. And I it's amazing. I love it. And that's the reason I believe that, like, mobile home parks, it fills all the check boxes for me, right? So physically, I get out there and I can work, and I work hard for them. I get out there and, you know, do whatever needs to be done, right? But then also spiritually, it feeds that bucket too. And mentally, just we've already went over some of the challenges and a lot of the stuff that goes. So I don't have like a yearning, oh man, I'm bored at work, you know, or I'm in a cubicle, or, you know, I'm not fulfilled in this way or that way. I mean, really, this line of work really fills all the buckets for me. And I that's the reason I really love it and pour so much into them.
Now, that's wonderful. And you talked about the fact that these homes typically are on the affordable side, right? You're filling a need that is so needed for affordable housing. But just because the housing costs less than other housing doesn't mean it shouldn't be a nice place. It shouldn't be a safe place. It shouldn't be a community where people feel connected and valued. And I just love all those programs that you talked about, because it's one thing to clean the place up and make sure the landscaping is nice. That's all basic, let's just be honest. But to go a step further and start trying to meet people's other needs, whether it is food or, you know, financial literacy, things like that, those are huge, because you're absolutely right. People don't teach you that. You either have parents that teach that to you, or a family member, or maybe a boss someone along the way that teaches you those things, or you have to go learn it yourself. And those are not easy conversations, because it is a easy way to feel less than when you think other people know more than you do. And you're stepping alongside these people and just saying, hey, it's an easy path. I can help you get the information you need. It's not as hard as you think it might be. This is what you need to know. And you're fulfilling something in them that they never expected to be fulfilled, at least not from the owner of the community.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. It's amazing. And you know, they teach me things. Right. Like, you know, every day I learn something different from them also. So I'm completely grateful for them also. And I think that, you know, what separates mobile home parks from apartments is just that. It's the community of of it, right? I've saw both worlds, and I just, you know, to me, the mobile home parks that we have and everything have just become such tight-knit communities, and they have the afternoon or the weekend barbecues as a community. They're starting to put on their own community events and stuff like that. I mean, we do Thanksgiving and Christmas stuff and all this other stuff, but as a community, they come together just as well. And like I said, we started a food bank, and we put the first amount of food in there, right? And anybody in the park and in the community can come and get whatever they need. But what we found is that people inside the community are now donating to the food bank, and people that take out, they bring double back when they can. And I mean, we haven't had to refill it or do anything, which we would, but the community kind of takes care of itself now. And it's amazing to watch when you give people the tools and the hope to thrive, then it, lo and behold, they do thrive, you know? And like I said, a lot of this comes from mentors that I've had over the last few years of doing this, and taking their ideas and trying to implement it in the way that I see best. And I've had a lot of mentors in this space, and I'm very thankful for them also.
Yeah, well, I think you're doing something really well if the communities that you're creating are now starting to take care of themselves. So that's wonderful. So as we kind of turn the corner on the end of our episode here, any advice that you would give to someone that's actually looking to make a difference, a meaningful change inside property management, inside real estate, any advice that you'd pass on to them?
Yeah. So all I would say is just think outside the box. You don't have to spend a ton of money to actually give back to a community. It's more of them knowing that where your heart is and that you actually care and that you're actually, you know, trying to give back to the community, whether that be your time. Like I said, it doesn't have to cost anything. These programs, we get people that donate their time for the tutoring and the budget classes and stuff. And we have nonprofits that come out to give financial classes. So it's all about taking the time to research what's out there that you could bring to your community to help them out, right? Whether it be, you know, different types of what there's, it's unlimited different types of programs out there, from churches to nonprofits to all kinds of stuff. Why not do the work to bring them programs to your community? Because most likely they're not doing it. They're worried about working 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, putting food on the table. So if you want to give back, something that you can help them out with is doing a little research on these programs and really trying to give back. And that'd be the biggest way. And just know that they're not numbers, right? These people that live here in the community, they're not numbers. They have families. They have worries just like you do. They have, you know, things that they're going through, and the things that you do, how can I say this? It shouldn't be like, well, you know, we give them a clean place to live. Okay. Nobody's going to fault you if that's all you do. Right. But don't make it to where like, it's like, you know, they should be thanking you every day for, you know, for having, you know, whatever, raising rents on them or something, when all you did was plant some flowers or whatever. But I'm telling you, if you give a little bit of yourself, they'll give a whole lot more back to you. That's a fact.
Yeah. One of the things, you know, I try to remember, and it's really hard, you know, for some of us in the industry or harder for others, is to remember the renter, right? Remember the tenant, remember the person that's living there. This is their home. This is, the housing is so important. Like we were talking before we started recording, you know, hosting family and so things like that. These people are doing those same things. Housing is so important, and we are fortunate to be in a position to provide that to other people and be in this industry. And we should never take that for granted. We should always try to, like you said, think outside the box. What else can we do that goes well beyond planting flowers just to make the place look better, right? That's just kind of basic. So, excellent. Well, Joseph, I really appreciate all your time today. Before we sign off, what's the best way for our listeners to learn more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, so my LinkedIn profile, Joseph Dwayne Jackson, LinkedIn. And then I have my Facebook is Joseph Jackson on there also. But I'm the biggest part. I'm on LinkedIn most of the time. That's where I meet most of make most of my connections and spend most of my time on there.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure we link that in our show notes. Well, thanks again for joining us for this great conversation. Like I said, very inspirational, very motivational towards doing more, right? There's so much more that all of us can be doing. So I appreciate the message that you shared with us today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for another episode. And until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.